camera crew is eating somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us this week as we get tips from the new voice of baseball for NBC Sports, Jason Benetti, on how to make something boring at least sound interesting. That's Wait, Wait, the NPR News Quiz.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Join Radio Catskill on Friday, March 13th at 7 p.m. for a special night of live music at the Big Eddie Brewing Company in Narrowsburg. Enjoy food discounts and $6 drafts, and listen to haunting and beautiful acoustic performances from New York-based singer-songwriters Justin Cole and Kate Prasher. Radio Catskill presents Justin Cole and Kate Prasher in Narrowsburg, March 13th at 7 p.m. at the Big Eddie Brewing Company. See you there.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got two brilliant bread bakers and teachers, the authors of the King Arthur Baking Company's Big Book of Bread. They'll spend the hour with us answering every question on baking you can think of. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. With me today is Monticello's own, the gifted entertainer, Slam Allen. Slam and I are going to be talking about his life and career, how he came to be a musician. He has lots of stories to tell, and I'm hoping he'll share a few of those with us. He recently appeared in Jeffersonville, New York, at the Americana Music Concert. And hopefully, if everything keeps opening up, he'll be playing more as time goes by. COVID hit musicians hard, and Slam is no exception. Slam has some surprises coming our way, so let's get to it. Here's my conversation with Slam Allen. Slam, thank you so much for coming on with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much, Donna, for having me.
You know, I know this isn't the best time in your life because your Uncle Buddy just passed, and he was a very, very important person in your life. And I appreciate you keeping this commitment and joining me today.
Yes, you know, it's really a situation that, you know, is really dear to my heart. But, you know, in death, you know, it brings life to me. And I'm just going to keep manifesting that positive energy and keep his spirit alive.
Let's start off with the early years. I know he was a big influence then. Your early years in Monticello. Could you tell me a bit about it?
Yes. Growing up in Monticello, you know, I believe from birth. Matter of fact, the day I was born, you know, my father was out doing a show. And I said, I guess I'm destined to be into this. And I just grew up with a rich knowledge of music and you know, people who gave me a wealth of love and just wanting to make people happy. And I had it around me my whole life.
What kind of music was your dad into?
My dad, you know, he played blues, he played soul, he played, you know, R&B. You know, he really played a few different types of music. I heard him a few times, you know, he was listening to Latin music. He reached out, you know, to different, you know, genres of music, you know.
Although it wasn't your first instrument, when you went to high school, you were in the orchestra and you played the upright bass.
Yes, upright bass, and was playing classical music with a bow and everything, you know. And I said to myself, you know, I am not going to get any girlfriends with this thing here.
Yes, and it's very hard to carry. You can't carry it around and look cool.
That's true indeed, true indeed.
You know, I was so surprised to hear that you had an orchestra, because a lot of high schools, most high schools have marching bands, but very few have orchestras. So that's pretty impressive.
Yes, yes. Monticello High was a very, you know, like progressive school. Looking back, you know, they did a lot of things that, you know, a lot of other schools may not have had the budget for. And I was very fortunate to be part of that.
Definitely. So you decided to play the guitar, and actually, but I think the first instrument you originally started gigging with was the drums, right?
Yes, that happened totally by accident. You know, I showed up at one of my dad and my uncle's, you know, their performances, and the drummer didn't show up.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I said, I'll do it. And that's how that happened.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, I never studied drums or anything. I just had the feel for it. And the next thing you know, I was the drummer for the band for a while. And boy, did I get an education on that.
Really? Wow, you know, you must have been, what's the word? You must have been channeling a drummer in that moment to have the courage to get up there on the stage and play an instrument that you really weren't all that familiar with.
It was all about feel. I just felt the music because I've been around it so long. And my dad and my uncles, you know, especially my dad, you know, if I played something wrong, you know, they would turn around and give me the stink eye. So, they would start a song and not tell me what it was, but I learned how to, get the right situation with them by their cadence. Yeah, it taught me another sense, so to speak. And that helped me throughout my music career of the training that they gave me. It was hard.
Well, sometimes, you know, learning things that way, it's so imprinted on you, you know, it just never leaves you.
Yeah, it really helped me a lot.
Well, you know, this leads to the first revelation about you, Slam, and that is that you never really wanted to be known as a blues man. Tell us about how you saw yourself and who you wanted to fashion yourself after.
Yes, you know, growing up, you know, I listened to so many different types of music. I just had an open ear and, you know, and I just really enjoyed a lot of entertainers. You know, and I saw this performance of Sammy Davis Jr. You know, he was part of the Rat Pack, and those guys together was powerful. But each one of them had this entertainment value, had something that captivated people. And I wanted to be like Sammy Davis Jr. You know, he did everything. When he stepped on that stage, you know, people were in awe of this man. You know, he did a variety of things on stage. His performance was so powerful, you know, it brought tears to my eyes. I said, I want to be that guy right there. That's the guy I want to be like. And I just always wanted to just make people smile and happy and get on that stage and just have people walk away and say, I can't wait to see this guy again.
You know, now that you're talking about him, I really think that he probably was a big influence on Michael Jackson's dancing. He was a fantastic dancer, Sammy Davis.
Yes, he was a fantastic dancer. And he, you know, he started as a little kid. Later on in life, I went backwards and just saw how he performed as a kid. And you know, it was incredible. The talent that he had, you know, and what I really liked about him that, you know, it wasn't about, you know, basically about color or anything like that. It was about the talent of a man, you know, and it's a beautiful thing, you know, to just see somebody be able to have that much talent and just be able to cross, you know, different genres and whatever and just make so many people happy. You know, and he influenced a lot of people.
He did. And you know what's really making me sad while we're talking about this? You know, I used to watch him on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I'm thinking as you're talking, I wonder how many people out there remember him.
True indeed. And I say to the younger people, you know, look back, you know, to see what your future can be. Yeah, you know, all the greats that, you know, made entertainment are no longer with us. But, you know, we can still see them thanks to, you know, videos and whatnot, you know.
One of your biggest influences, though, thank God, is still alive, and that's George Benson. And you have a great story about him. Would you share it with us?
Yes, George Benson, man, when I first had the, you know, opportunity to hear George Benson, man, I was hooked. And his record that he had, Breezin', I wore the grooves off of this record. I had to get another one. Years later, I was in New York City, and I was playing a club in the Village. And George Benson was right down the street playing, you know, another club, because that's what he'd do. He would go and, you know, rehearse with the band and stuff when he's about to go out on tour. And he was walking across the street to get his car from the parking garage. And I just happened to be walking down the street and we met face to face. And I looked at him and I said, "Hey, George." He said, "Hey, man." He acted like he knew me, man. That day made me feel so good. I met one of my idols, man. And he just was such the nicest person and just gave me such a warm reception, man. It was just a beautiful thing.
And then the last part of the story is when he did his exit.
Oh my gosh. Now that was one of the biggest part of the stories. He went to that parking garage and got into a brand new Rolls Royce. I said, I want to be like that right there.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we were talking about it, you told me that I didn't know. I mean, I love George Benson, too. And after I spoke to you, I went out and got a CD of Breezin', because all I had was an album, which I don't even know where it is now. But I got a CD, and believe me, I've been playing it daily. But he is a Jehovah's Witness. And yeah. I did not know that.
Yes, I found that out later on in life, too, that he was a Jehovah's Witness. And, you know, if he had came and knocked on my door, I think I probably would have fainted at the door.
And you would have been joining up. You would have been going down to that hall just so you could
sign me up. It's good enough for George. It's good enough for me.
Exactly. But, of course, unfortunately, despite what you want, people do know about you primarily, I think, as a blues man, and especially they recognize you that you were the band leader, the lead guitarist, and the lead singer of the James Cotton Blues Band. And if you're going to be in the blues, that pedigree is about as good as you can get. How did that come about?
It was a point in my life where I just wanted a change. I wanted to be somewhere where no one really knew me, and I just wanted to see if I could really have a go at it. So I had a friend that lived in Chicago. He was always telling me, "Come to Chicago, come to Chicago." So one day I said, "You know what? I'm going to Chicago." So I packed up and I moved to Chicago, and I had a place to stay. And no more than maybe like a couple of weeks later of me being in Chicago, and I must say too, everybody welcomed me with open arms. You know, in the blues community there and the music community, just welcomed me. And James Cotton came to town, and he needed a band at the time. So he was auditioning people. And a person who knew a person who knew a person, you know, I got the call. The call to come to rehearsal. I went to the rehearsal. Next thing you know, I was with him for about 10 years. And it was a beautiful thing that, you know, all I can say is that I was led to it by my higher power. I wasn't expecting it. It just happened. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
That's fantastic. Just imagine what would have happened if you just kept saying no to going to Chicago.
Right.
Life would be different, right?
Yes, it changed my life.
It did. Listen, we're going to take a break in a moment, but before we do, could you just tell that quick story about what happened when you were performing in Sweden in 2005?
If I could remember it.
Okay.
The brain hasn't caught up with me yet.
Well, this is the story about, I'm just going to say one word, okay. Czechoslovakia.
Oh, okay. Now, I got you. I was playing a famous club called Stampin'. It's a famous blues jazz club. And all of a sudden, this big black limousine rolls up. And I said, "Oh, okay, somebody coming in there with, you know, some money or something or whatever." And I saw some security people come, you know, with the things in their ear and whatever. They came in first. And then next thing you know, pops out of the back was the president of the Czech Republic at the time. I had no idea, you know, exactly who he was. And I'm going to tell you right now, I can't even pronounce his name. It was the president of the Czech Republic. It was one of the biggest highlights of my career to be able to play for somebody of that stature. Yeah, he loved the blues.
You know what? You couldn't pronounce his name, but he obviously could pronounce your name. And there he was. That's pretty exciting. Okay, Slam, we're going to take a quick break. Let me just reintroduce you to the audience. I'm talking today to Slam Allen, the entertainer from Monticello, New York. And we're going to be right back with more from Slam after these messages.
The U.S. military is using AI tools in its strikes on Iran, even as the government feuds with the maker of that same technology.
This decision to abandon Anthropic as a company just before an attack on a major country and the beginning of a major war, it's just wacky.
Seems the age of killer robots is upon us on this week's On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, on the cusp of our nation's 250th anniversary, historian Eddie Moran delivers a fascinating history-packed lecture on the Hudson Valley leading up to the revolution.
You had dozens of European ethnicities and languages here, many of whom have assimilated to local Dutch culture or English culture. And as colonization comes up here, those diverse populations are here. And of course, they're coming onto someone else's land.
Saturday at 11 a.m., right here on Radio Catskill.
On this Old House Radio Hour, adding solar to your home is about to get easier.
You can take a panel, plug it into the microinverter, and then plug it into your wall, and that can offset your monthly power bills.
Plus, our friends at Cheap Old Houses share how to get a home on the National Register of Historic Homes. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You've been listening to Catskill Character, and if you've just tuned in, my guest today is Slam Allen, who has regaled us with stories about his life as a musician and entertainer. In the second half of the show, Slam is going to be talking about yet another aspect of his personality that most people probably don't know about. So let's get back to it. This is WJFF Radio Catskill. You told me that this time in your life you think of as the resurgence of Slam Allen.
Yes, you know, I'm rejuvenating myself, you know, and I had a low point because all the things that was happening and you know, people and whatever, you know, and all of a sudden I just felt like I just didn't want to do it anymore. I know I just felt like I didn't want to do it anymore, and I was looking for something, and that something that I was actually looking for was myself. I had lost myself. Trying to chase, you know, your dream and stuff, you know, you forget about the most important part of it. And that's, you know, that's yourself. So I had to do a lot of soul searching and really realize who I was, that 13-year-old kid who wanted to make people happy. And when I realized that and remembered that, you know, now that was my motivation for why I wanted to do music.
It's not an easy profession. In fact, you told me it's like dancing with the devil to be in the music industry. It's rough. So I can see that there'd be times when your energy, especially with what we're about to talk about, your energy would just be zapped. You'd feel like there's nothing left.
It's true and true indeed. You know, today, you know, a lot of times people just looking to, you know, just basically make money, you know, and they don't look at what talent you have, what value you have bringing to the table. It's about what somebody else thinks that could be profitable for them. And I just said to myself, you know, why am I trying to prove what so many and myself already know? You know, I'm an entertainer. And if you can't see the value of me being an entertainer, then I don't need to be doing this.
You told me that when you walk into a room, not even necessarily when you're working, but if you just walk into a room, you can talk to someone in 5 minutes. They're going to feel the love because you have a lot of love inside of you. And that was obviously instilled at a very young age. But you feel that love, and it's kind of a cycle. You give it out and you get it back. And when you're working in the music business and people are just sucking the energy out of you, telling you what to do, how to look, where to go, you're not feeling the love. And it's hard to put it out there. So I am glad about this resurgence.
Yes. I meditated, I prayed, I did a lot, like I said, a lot of soul searching. And, the energy just came to me, man. And, and a lot of times too, a lot of people really, just showed an outpouring of love. They were concerned about me. And I said, I made so many people happy. How can I stop? And that's what really brought me back, the love that I got back from so many people who just want to see me, just want to know that I'm well. And it really gave me energy, a resurgence of what I'm doing this for.
How did it feel last week when you performed in Jeffersonville at the Americana Music Concert?
It was really a beautiful thing. People really came out to see me. I had people who came from a distance, to just come see me. And just to feel that love and have people participating in, what I was doing, man, it's something that you can't explain. You're just on a natural high. You're just on a natural high. And it just really felt good to be out there performing and making people happy.
I know you wrote two songs that were on that last album with James Cotton. Was that album called Giant?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that album got a lot of awards also. I was just wondering if you're writing any music nowadays.
Yes, my creativity had went away for a while, but all of a sudden it came back. It came back and I'm just hearing, music and feeling music now. And The next music that I put out is going to reflect really, where I am today and how I want to be today. And it just comes, like I say, it may sound like a broken record, but it just comes from the love of the people and feeling, what the people want. And I always said, it's not about me. It's about how many smiles I put on people's faces. And that's what's coming to me now. That's where my creativity is how many people I can make smile, or how many people I can make move with the music I'm putting out.
Yeah, I heard last week when you played in Jeffersonville, there were people dancing all over the place. So you were making them move, that's for sure.
Yeah, man, it was, like I say, it was a beautiful experience just to see people up and dancing and having a great time. And like I say, I was on a natural high with that.
Yeah. Well, regardless of the pitfalls of being a working musician, you are having a pretty extraordinary life. Yet there is another aspect to you that people probably don't know about. And this has been something that's been going on since you were a child. Would you explain?
Yes. I found out that I was an empath. A very good friend of mine who's in to spirituality and things like that, brought it to my attention. And at first, when she told me, I was like, what? What is that? So I started, studying it and, feeling it. And it turned out that she was right, that I'm an empath. I could feel people's energy, and I can also take my energy and give it back. I started thinking backwards. I've been doing that since I was a kid. I didn't really realize, what it was, but I always wondered why people gravitated to me and why people, just looked at me as being something, or me having this special energy, right? And it makes so much sense, it makes so much sense today, what it's about.
You're one of those people, I bet, you have the ability when you go to see someone or you bump into someone, you can make them feel, and you're not doing it on purpose, it's just the energy, you make them feel like you've been waiting all day to see them. You make them feel important. They feel that energy that way. I know I've met people like that in my life that, you know, it seems like they were waiting around all day just to see me. I know that wasn't true, but that's what it felt like. And after you told me this, I did some research about empaths. And, you know, there's several different types. And you seem to fit the definition of what they call an intuitive empath. And before I go on about that, would you tell the listener about what you felt about the pandemic?
Yes, I felt it coming for a while. And it was telling me that, you know, it was going to be in 2020. I didn't exactly know what it was, but it was telling me that some not good energy is coming in 2020. A shift, a change in a lot of things. And I did not know that it was going to be, you know, of this magnitude. But I felt it, you know, it was the most horrible feeling that you could ever feel. And then not knowing exactly what it was, man, it tormented me for quite a while.
Yeah. How do you shield yourself from all of that input, that constant input?
Well, you have to, at first I didn't know how, and it was really bothering me, and it was really, you know, changing who I was, because I didn't know what to do with this energy. But, you know, my teaching was going and as I was learning and stuff, what cancels negative is, you know, of course, positive. And how I get positive energy is from, you know, meditation. And I get it from love of people. I get it from doing, you know, good things for people, you know, and that's what I like to do. I always like to do that since I was a kid. I just wanted to help and just, you know, spread love to people. And that's the cure. That's basically the cure.
Slam, thank you so much for being on the show today. You are a blessing.
Oh, thank you, Don. It's people like you that bring awareness to people like me. I greatly appreciate it.
That was my interview with Slam Allen in 2021. And next week, March 14th, 2026, Slam will be presenting some Winter Blues in Narrowsburg, New York at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in their Salon Series from 2 to 3 in the Krause Recital Hall. Don't miss this exciting, soulful, empathetic artist. Let's go out with a little music from Slam. This is Let the Good Times Roll. You can see these videos on YouTube, and Slam's website is slamallen.com. This is Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Host Sabine Sadiq for this special program, Storytellers, Muslims, Community, and Culture in America, which weaves together the voices of American Muslims to chronicle their long history in this country, their often hidden contributions, and shows what we can hear when Muslims have a chance to hold the mic. From 8 p.m.
Monday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
The Trump administration is building mega detention facilities in the U.S. There's a $38 billion plan to purchase industrial warehouses and turn them into warehouses for people facing deportation. DHS says conditions are humane. People who've been detained in some centers say they didn't expect to come out alive.
It's a lot of possibility to die in jail, and it's unfair.
That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.